Welcome to your AEW Dynamite recap for Wednesday, September 16, 2020. I am the Sala Monster. You know, one of my favorite all-time street fights in wrestling is actually a WCW match, Spring Stampede 1994. I've talked about the match on the podcast before. I think it was part of my WCW countdown many years ago. But if you've never seen it, it was Spring Stampede 94. It was the Nasty Boys against Max Payne and Cactus Jack. And to this day, one of the most brutal matches that I have ever seen. I almost feel guilty watching it. The way that the beating that Mick Foley took in that match, especially at the finish, was inhumane. But it's one of my favorite WCW matches that I've ever seen. This parking lot brawl tonight with Santana and Ortiz against Best Friends at the end of the show tonight on Dynamite is right up there alongside of it. I'm not going to say if it's better or not, but it's in that same category. It's in that same league. These guys beat the ever-loving crap out of each other in the main event tonight. If you're going to have a street fight, you got to go all out and do it the right way. And I will give AEW credit for that. They said they were going to have a parking lot fight, and that is exactly what they had. They had a fight. That was a hell of a main event. And one of the best finishes to any episode of Dynamite that I've ever seen, with Trent's mom at the very end. I love that main event. Funny thing about the Spring Stampede match, I'm pretty sure they had Tony Schiavone on commentary for that as well. So you got Tony Schiavone on commentary in 94 for that match, and Tony Schiavone on commentary tonight for this one. So it's good to hear Tony's voice. But thank you for joining me and choosing me for your Dynamite coverage tonight. Please do, while you are here, if you are a new viewer, if you are not yet subscribed to the channel, do go ahead and hit that sub button, so that way when we go live in the future, you'll be part of all the action, and you'll know exactly when live streams are going up. Make sure your notifications are on. So why don't we get right into it here? We got no time to waste. We had Jurassic Express in the ring already for the opener. They were wrestling FTR this week. This was a non-title match. AEW Tag Team Championships not on the line. We were told by the announcers, I think it was Excalibur who mentioned, that FTR did not want to defend their titles against Jurassic Express. I didn't know that they had the authority to make that decision on their own, but apparently they had input, and they said, yeah, we don't really feel like defending the titles, so we're not going to. So this was not a championship match. The Young Bucks, before FTR could come to the ring, the Young Bucks walked out in their street clothes. They got into the ring, and the first thing they did was they hit referee Mike Posey with super kicks. And they knocked out poor Mike Posey, and they walked to the back. So I guess even the Young Bucks are very unhappy with the officiating in AEW. This is out on the heels of them super kicking Alex Marvez, and I'm going to mention Marvez here in a second. Super kicking Alex Marvez in the back last week. Remember, they were fined $5,000 each. So they just super kicked a referee, walked to the back, and the camera is following them as they're walking into, I guess, what would be the AEW equivalent of the gorilla position. And who is sitting there at the gorilla position but Tony Khan? Now, Tony Khan, I'm pretty sure we've seen him on Dynamite before. I'm almost positive there's been at least one other time where he's been briefly seen, but he is not a character on the show. We usually don't see him on the show. I'm not worried about him being added as a character. We don't need him as a character. We don't need an authority figure in AEW. But he was sitting there wearing exactly the same thing that I would be wearing if I had to sit there in the Florida heat and the Florida humidity in the back like that. He looked like he was ready to hit the beach. And the Young Bucks, I think they threw money at him. It's like they're paying their fine in advance. So they walk past Tony Khan, there's FTR, they exchange a few words, and off walk the Bucks. FTR has smiles on their faces, and so they walk out to the ring. So the build has begun. The build has begun to the Bucks and FTR. They're doing the slow build. You know, did the Young Bucks turn heel? They're acting like it. I don't know that I would call it a heel turn. I don't think it's going to last. I don't think the Young Bucks have gone heel. I think they're showing a different side of themselves. See, my problem with this, and it's not even like a big problem, but they're out there walking around, kicking people, and they're acting like a couple of badasses. The Young Bucks are not badasses. I cannot look at the Young Bucks and think to myself, boy, these two guys are a couple of badasses. No, they're not. they're best when they're smug. If they're going to go heel, go full heel and just be smug and arrogant. The smug Bucks. That can work. The Young Bucks walking around with their chests all puffed out like they're a bunch of tough guys, that just doesn't work for me. But I thought this match was a great opener for the show this week. Jurassic Express. You got Jungle Boy out there, and you'll notice that this has been going on now for a while. That every week, whether he wins or loses, and he does lose a lot of matches, the Jurassic Express does not win, you know, every match that they're in, but they've been really giving a lot of airtime, a lot of shine to Jungle Boy. They've really been putting him in situations where he can go on Dynamite week after week and just really go out there and just shine and show everybody what he's made of, show everybody what he's capable of. And he's getting more and more over, I feel like, with every appearance that he makes. And look, you know, Jungle Boy, I put him up there with Hangman, MJF, and probably Darby. I throw Darby Allin in there as that young core of talent that they have in that company. And I think you'll be able to add Ricky Starks over time to that group as well. But I think Hangman, Darby, Sammy to a lesser degree. I don't know what's going on lately with Sammy. But Jungle Boy is in that group, I think, of guys that this company can build around, that they are building around, that they see as the future. When I say stars of the company, I don't just mean in the middle of the card. I mean the future stars of this company. You know, Jungle Boy may not be the biggest guy in the world, but clearly he's very popular. He's very talented. He's very young. He's got all the tools to be a big star in the company, regardless of whether he's 6'5" or not. So I put him in that upper tier of guys they're going to be building around for these next 5 years in this company. Unless we start seeing defections the other way, from AEW to WWE. It's inevitable. It's going to happen. It may take a couple of years, but it happened with WCW back in, 20 years ago. Guys went back and forth. It wasn't everybody just defecting over to WCW. Eventually, you had WCW guys defecting to WWE. Maybe the question we should be asking is, who among all of these AEW talents is going to be the first to go either back to WWE or for the first time go to WWE? But hey, maybe they'll all be happy in AEW. If Tony Khan can keep them all happy, maybe there won't be too much back and forth. But this was a great opener. We had Cash Wheeler. He had cut off Jungle Boy with a power slam, and FTR was working him over for a while. Luchasaurus got the hot tag, came in, was running wild with kicks, hit a standing moonsault for a near fall. Jungle Boy blind tagged himself back into the match. FTR gave him... I mean, there was a sequence here, and I think it was mostly Jungle Boy and Harwood, back and forth. Just all of these near fall attempts, close two counts, all just in rapid fire succession. Jungle Boy and Harwood are trading strikes back and forth. Wheeler and Luchasaurus, they brawl out to the floor. So now it's just Jungle Boy and it's Dax, right, in the ring. So Wheeler just launches Luchasaurus over the barricade outside the ring. Jungle Boy hits a tope through the ropes out onto Wheeler. Jungle Boy is one of the few who I think should be allowed to be doing dives like that. In fact, I name-dropped him and I think Darby were the two AEW guys I name-dropped when I went on my rant about dives, mostly about bigger guys doing dives. Jungle Boy is one of those guys who should be able to do moves like this because it makes him stand out more. But you still don't want to overdo it. I still don't want to overdose on dives here on these shows. But he was one of the names that I mentioned as being the ones that should be doing dives if he wants to. But he tried for a sunset flip near the ropes, and Wheeler and Tully Blanchard, they basically reversed the move. And so they reversed Dax into the other direction, and they reversed the cradle, and he pins Jungle Boy. Might have been holding their hands from the outside, so they cheated. Because they're heels, and that's what heels do. But they got the win. And that's the other thing I liked about this. The champions, first of all, the champions didn't get beat. If the champions got beat, then they would have become the number one contenders. But that's what they wanted you to believe. Like, that's been the formula in wrestling and in WWE for so long, that if you have a non-title match, you and the stipulation is that the challengers, if they win, are going to get a championship match next week on TV. Then the expectation is that, well, I guess the challengers are going to win, right? Because you got to build to the title match. But no, the champions won. So Jurassic Express will not get their title match next week. They did not follow the formula. And I like that. I could appreciate that. To the back, I mentioned Mr. Marvez a moment ago. There was Alex Marvez. No selling the super kicks from the Young Bucks, right? I mean, I figured maybe he'd be carrying his teeth around in a plastic baggie. He'd have some kind of wrap around his jaw or something. No selling the super kicks. He rushes over. Something's happened in the back. And it's Matt Hardy. As if this fucking guy has not been through enough. Matt Hardy is writhing around on the ground in pain. He's holding his legs. Something happened. Maybe he got a Charlie horse. We don't know. And by the way, those Charlie horses, they're pretty painful. All right. If that were me, I'd be writhing around on the floor too. Don't judge me. But it wasn't a Charlie horse. We don't know exactly what happened. We are left to assume. Private Party, they were there. They said, I don't know. One minute we were discussing strategy. Because Matt is like their mentor. And they go, the next minute we turned around and Matt's on the ground. And then over walks Chris Jericho and Jake Hager. Jericho's got the baseball bat in his hand. He's got Floyd. And he's laughing. Oh, what happened to Matt? Oh, gee. You know, you got to be real careful around here. So obviously, we know exactly what happened to Matt. They were mocking him. But poor Matt Hardy. Poor Matt Hardy just can't catch a break. But the good news is that from what I'm being told, in my non-existent earpiece, Dr. Samson has cleared Matt and said that Matt is good to go. So Matt is cleared to wrestle. We had Kenny Omega joining on commentary for the next match, which was a singles match. It was Hangman Page against Frankie Kazarian of SCU. And we were told by the announcers that originally this was conceived of as a tag team match. This was supposed to be Hangman and Omega against SCU, but there's been a split. And Omega has, you know, he made it clear on commentary here that he's not interested in doing the tag team thing anymore. He's ready to branch back off into the singles ranks. They did acknowledge them that they are the number one seed, number one spot, whatever, in the tag team rankings. So he said, well, look, if we're number one, then I guess, you know, if we end up having to get a championship match, then so be it. But it's not something I'm pursuing. I'm ready to move on. I want to, you know, focus on my singles career. Isn't that what everybody in AEW, all the AEW fans have been asking for? No, I've been asking for it. I agree with Kenny. It's about time he goes back into the singles ranks. But the fact that they're talking about them being number one tells you that there's going to be a rematch. We are going to get Hangman and Omega in a rematch with FTR at some point, probably on TV, maybe on that anniversary show. In fact, I can almost guarantee you it probably will be on the anniversary show. They're going to build that thing up like a really big deal. You know, they're going to build that anniversary show up. That would be the perfect place to do it. So there was a running shooting star press by Hangman. Always very impressive to, you know, Hangman's not a small man. He's really not. I've met him. I've stood next to him. He's a big guy. Not a big guy like the Brian Cage big or, you know, Great Khali big, but he's a big dude. But he did a running shooting star to Kazarian for a near fall. There was a slingshot DDT into the ring by Kazarian to Hangman for a near fall. This is actually a pretty good match. I thought this match was pretty good. I enjoyed the opener more, but this was a very good match. Hangman hit a Liger bomb at one point for a near fall. So Hangman was out on the apron, and they were trading strikes, and Page sort of... Kazarian went for a move. It might have been a dragon screw in the ropes, I don't remember, but he shoved him off. And in the time it took for Kazarian to kind of recover and turn back around, in comes Hangman for the finish, the buckshot lariat, and he gets the win. As soon as this match was over, Kenny Omega could not get off commentary fast enough. He goes, well, thanks, guys. Put the headset down, and he got the hell out of there. He was trying to get out of there before Hangman, who looked the whole time like he was trying to impress Kenny. He was looking over at him. He wanted to get out of there before Hangman could see him. So Kenny goes back through the tunnel, and then Hangman's looking around. He looks over by the announce desk, and he doesn't see his partner. He doesn't see Kenny. There's no Kenny Omega. And this guy looked like he had just gotten dumped by his girlfriend. Either that or his dog died. He had this really sad look on his face. He asked the ring announcer to toss him a beer anyway, because that's what you do when you're depressed, right? You drink. Although you shouldn't really need an excuse to drink. That's actually probably a very bad thing to do. If you're down in the dumps, you're depressed, drinking is the worst thing that you could do. Not that I would know. But poor Hangman. Hangman, he lost his partner. You know, he lost his best friend. You'd be sad too if your partner wanted nothing to do with you anymore. MJF against Sean Dean. This thing did not even go 10 seconds. This was one of the quickest matches I've ever seen. Bell rang, MJF poked him in the eye, and he locked on the Salt of the Earth armbar for the immediate win. So a very quick win for MJF, who takes the microphone. He's got something to say. And so MJF is going to address the crowd. He says that he's very upset that Jon Moxley cheated at All Out. He should still be undefeated. Not only should he be undefeated still, but he should be the AEW World Champion. So he's very upset about this. He wants people to refer to him as the undefeated, undisputed, uncrowned world champion of All Elite Wrestling. He called Justin Roberts a smooth-brained schmuck. I'm not sure exactly what that's supposed to mean. But he forced him to refer to him as the undefeated, undisputed, uncrowned AEW world champion, which he did. He goes, you know, to get ahead in this company, I'm noticing something. He goes, to get ahead, you've got to be part of a faction. You've got to be part of a faction or a stable. And he said, you know, I'm a lone wolf. But maybe it's about time that this lone wolf joined a wolf pack. Not the wolf pack. And he left it at that. He didn't say he was going to join for sure. He just said, whether I join or I don't join, you know, I'm better than you and you know it. But he's teasing the idea that he's going to link up with an existing faction within AEW. And to me, I know it feels like there's a lot of different factions, but there aren't that many really for a guy like him to join. Eddie Kingston, you know, for him to join Eddie Kingston's group makes no sense because Eddie Kingston's group is comprised of tag teams. Right? I mean, that's what Eddie Kingston's group is made up of. And also, a group like that, you know, MJF and Eddie Kingston are two of the best talkers in the entire company. You don't need two guys like that in the same faction. You only need one. You only need one. So to me, that doesn't really make any sense. What would make more sense is if they are in fact going to form some kind of new horseman type group, whatever they end up calling them, involving Tully and FTR and anybody else who might possibly join that group. That's the kind of group that if MJF was going to join a faction, I could see him being part of. And even that, I'm not really a big fan of. You know, I don't think MJF needs to be part of a faction. But if he's going to be, that's the type of group that I can see him in. Walking out there, wearing the suits, wearing the nice clothes, being the mouthpiece for the group. Like what The Rock was to the Nation of Domination when he started to take over from Farouk, and Farouk thought this guy was becoming a little too big for his britches. That is what I can see MJF being in a group like that. And so I guess we'll see which side he ends up on. It's kind of interesting. It's a different direction for him. Right, changes things up a little bit, I guess. I assume Wardlow would come along with him. Maybe Wardlow could be the muscle of the group, I guess. That's always a possibility. Again, if you're just joining, if you refresh from before, we had a little hiccup, a little glitch in the Matrix, but we're back. Speaking of Eddie Kingston, that brings me to Eddie Kingston, one of my favorite parts of Dynamite, when he's actually on the show. He was in the ring with the Lucha Bros and the Butcher and the Blade. Those are his guys. Those are his four guys right there. And he says, first of all, he reminds everybody that he did not lose in the Battle Royal. He wants everybody to remember that. He was not eliminated in the Battle Royal at the pay-per-view. So that's very important to remember. He calls the group a family. We're not a faction. We're not a stable. We're a family. He goes, sometimes families fight. Most of the time when families fight, they go out to dinner to make up, or they have some kind of family therapy session. He says, not us. We're a family of violence. We enjoy being violent. And he calls over to the Butcher and the Blade. Now, the Butcher and the Blade are outside the ring. Pentagon and Phoenix are inside the ring. And he looks over at the Butcher and the Blade, and he says to them, "Find me a victim, please." So the Butcher and the Blade reach over the barricade, and they drag a bunch of wrestlers over in the front row, and they just start beating the shit out of them. And I didn't recognize the guy with the blue hair. I know Griff Garrison, the long-haired kid. That was Griff Garrison. I know that. And they're just beating these guys up. And then Eddie ends it with this. He says, "You know, all is well with the Lucha Bros. All is well with Phoenix. All is well with my best friend, Pentagon." And he says, he turns his attention to the Blade. And he looks right at the Blade. I was starting to think, oh no, they're going to kick the Blade out. They're going to turn the Butcher on the Blade. You can't have one without the other. Thankfully, that didn't happen. But he looked at the Blade and he said to the Blade, "Now it's time for you to get your house in order." And he didn't say anything else. He just told the Blade, "It's time for you to get your house in order." And I'm guessing that is probably bad news for QT Marshall. QT Marshall has been managed by, has been hanging with Allie now for a number of months. Allie in real life is the Butcher's wife. Now, who was the Butcher in Impact? The Butcher was, what was his name there? Was he Braxton Sutter? Was that his name? Anyway, he and Allie are an item in real life. I think they're husband and wife. So it looks like the Butcher and the Blade may be getting their bunny back. More importantly, she used to be with them. She was the bunny, and they might be getting their bunny back. I have no idea what else Eddie Kingston could be referring to. What else could this guy be talking about, if not referring to Allie? I do want to just make a mention of something here. This is going to, I know, be welcome news to a lot of you who are a fan of the segment. There is a brand new episode of RSPW Rewind dropping this week. Oh yes, if you have been waiting for the next installment, it's been several weeks. You will not have to wait much longer. This Friday at noon. Noon Eastern Time, right here on the YouTube channel, a brand new episode of RSPW Rewind is going to drop, and this is one of the many posts in this video. Chris Jericho, mid-carder for life. Oh, it's going to be a great installment. Over 30 minutes worth. So I hope you will join me. It's not live. It's going to drop Friday at noon. So come on back here to the YouTube channel then. People get very excited for RSPW Rewind. I love doing it too. And we got some good ones. So now we move on to another good match. Again, I probably enjoyed the opener more. But Private Party against Chris Jericho and Jake Hager. Now trying to work their way up the tag team ranks. We heard from Jericho last week. Now he's aspiring to become a co-holder of the AEW Tag Team Championship. That is his new dream. And the reason why this is happening, by the way, and Jericho commented on this recently, he is still hopeful of doing the match with Mike Tyson. He wants to do something with Mike Tyson. Well, Mike Tyson is probably not interested in wrestling right now because Mike Tyson has a fight coming up. He was supposed to be fighting, I think, in about a week and a half. That fight got pushed back. Was it him? Is it him and Roy Jones? In the chat, let me know who his opponent is. I think it's Roy Jones Jr., but whoever he's fighting, it was supposed to be at the end of this month. It got bumped to November. Mike Tyson ain't wrestling before he fights. This guy's 53, 54 years old. He's got to train. He's got to get ready. So Jericho says the negotiations have been going slower than they would have liked. That's why they had to drag out the Orange Cassidy feud to a third match. And that's why Chris Jericho now is wrestling for the tag team title. They're still hoping to do something with Mike Tyson. I wouldn't put all my eggs in that basket. But he's still hoping to do something with Tyson. We'll see if it works out. During this match, Chris Jericho, I don't know if you noticed, was tweeting. He was on Twitter during this match, which should answer the question of whether or not this show was live or taped. We had Isaiah Cassidy hitting a lion salt off the ropes onto Jericho for a near fall. Cassidy went out onto the apron. He was going to go for a move. Hager whacked him in the back with the baseball bat. And I don't know if you noticed this. When Hager went to jump back into the ring, he didn't like do the Brock Lesnar vertical jump. He climbed on his knees to just climb back up onto the apron. He missed the rope. He almost fell backwards. That looked like it was a little embarrassing. So Mark Quinn eventually got the hot tag, took out Hager. They both got Jericho in the corner. They hit the Hardy Boys Poetry in Motion, did Private Party. Hager comes back in, accidentally squashes his partner in the corner. Cassidy comes running in, and Hager, and we've seen Rey Mysterio, we've seen people do this move with him in the past, many years ago. Cassidy comes running in, and Hager launches him up into the air. Unbeknownst to him, though, he propels him up into the air, and he lands on Jericho's shoulders, barely, but he does, and he takes him over with a Rana. Cassidy's back is killing him from the bat shot. He's selling it. He climbs up top. Not the smartest thing to do if you're nursing a back injury, but he climbs up to the top rope, misses the senton. Jericho rolls out of the way, and then Jericho gets up and clobbers him with the Judas Effect for the win. You knew Jericho and Hager were not going to lose. This is the first match that they're having since, you know, Jericho announced that they're going to be going after the tag team titles. So you knew they were going to win. The outcome here was never in doubt, but Private Party gave him a good fight. You know, for the time it lasted, I thought it was a good match. I enjoyed the opener more, but it was a good match. Jericho beat up Cassidy after, put him in the Walls of Jericho. Mark Quinn came in, knocked out Jericho with a Pele kick, and the heels bailed, and so that was the entire match. Ivelisse. This was one of my favorite parts of the show. Ivelisse with Diamante in her corner, challenging Thunder Rosa for the first time ever on Dynamite. We had an NWA Women's Championship match here on AEW TV. Definitely not a plastic belt. Let me make that very clear. Not a plastic belt. In case anybody was wondering, in case there's any controversy or debate over it, not a plastic belt. All right, good. So we're all on the same page. I have to give AEW their props. You know, we are not that far removed from a time or a period in AEW where we were having women's matches on TV that were really not that good. And the women's division, everybody was talking about what a weak point it is in the company, and they still have work to do in terms of really making the women's division something that people want to go out of their way to watch. This right here is one way that you can do that, I think. To think that we went from where we were not that long ago. I mean, you go back a month, 2 months, 2.5 months ago, what we were getting in the women's division, to Thunder Rosa defending the NWA women's title against Ivelisse, a name that I've been floating for the longest time. Why is Ivelisse not being given a chance? I know there's been a lot of rumors and stories about her and stuff, but she's a talent, and I felt like she deserved an opportunity. She deserved a look, and she got one. And her and Diamante took the win in that women's tag team tournament, and now we got Ivelisse on TV challenging for the NWA women's title. I don't think anybody would have predicted that a few months ago. But here we are, and I give NWA a lot of props for that. This is the sort of thing I want to see more of on TV. So Hikaru Shida was watching this match from ringside, taking a great interest in this match. Ivelisse came off the top with a Rana early on, flashed a very smug grin. So as she walked over to Thunder Rosa, Rosa jumped and hit a dropkick that just sent Ivelisse flying halfway across the ring. Even Tony Schiavone reacted huge to this. It was just a standing dropkick, but she sent this woman back half a length in this ring. I thought that was great. A little bit later on, there was a Death Valley driver to Ivelisse for a near fall. Wicked kick to the head by Ivelisse. She folded up Rosa for the pin. Rosa kicked out at the last second. Rosa tried two or three different times to get Ivelisse up for the tombstone pile driver. And I don't remember what the name of the move that she uses. They called it Tombstone on commentary. So if I didn't know, the announcers didn't know. That's the sort of thing the announcers should know. But anyway, it was a Tombstone. She tried to go for it. Ivelisse would counter out of it. But finally, she got her up for it, dropped her right on the head. 1-2-3, and Thunder Rosa retains the NWA women's title. I did not expect a title change here. I thought this was a very good match. She was attacked. Ivelisse did not sell the tombstone for very long. She and Diamante double-teamed Thunder Rosa. Shida came in, chased them off, picked up the NWA Women's Championship, placed it over Rosa's shoulder, and walked off. And you know what that means? You know what that means, don't you? We're getting a rematch at some point. We're going to get a rematch between Thunder Rosa and Hikaru Shida. And my guess is that this time, instead of the AEW title, it'll be for the NWA. Women's Championship. Well, I mean, why not? One good turn deserves another. Sheeta gave her a crack at the AEW title, so why wouldn't she give her a crack at the NWA title? And the perfect place to do it, the anniversary show. If I'm right, because on the other stream before we got cut off here, I was talking a little bit earlier about the tag team titles and how it seems like Kenny Omega and Hangman Page, they're number one in the rankings. I think they're probably going to get their rematch, and Kenny's going to have no choice but to wrestle, even though he wants to kind of branch off on his own. But you could be setting up for an anniversary show on October 14th on Dynamite with Moxley and Archer for the AEW title, FTR against Hangman and Omega rematch for the tag team titles, and Thunder Rosa rematch with Sheeta, but this time the NWA championship is on the line. Maybe Rosa gets her win back. I don't necessarily want to see rematches up and down the card, but I think that would be, those would be three solid matches to put on that show if they wanted to go in that direction. So, just a thought. Kip Sabian was cutting a promo in the back with Miro behind him doing some bench pressing. And Miro pauses his workout to get up and let Kip know that he's the best man and he's going to put together the best bachelor party, which is either going to make for some very entertaining television or very entertaining television that sucks. Because you could have really bad TV, but it's like so bad you can't look away. I feel like that's what we're probably in for here. Really, really funny stuff, or really, really bad, but it's so bad you can't look away. But the bachelor party is coming. The wedding is coming, and the bachelor party comes before the wedding. Jake Roberts. Jake the Snake Roberts was in the ring with his client, Lance Archer, who grabbed the masked man out of the crowd. As they're coming out, you know, Archer just grabbed this masked luchador out of the front row, threw him in the ring, chokeslammed him to hell, as Jake Roberts then called it a proper ring entrance. Proper ring entrance. So Jake called out Taz. And Taz came out and said that he is happy to be doing business with the two of them. All of a sudden, they're buddy-buddy. And they're going to be putting their differences aside, right? The enemy of my enemy is my friend kind of thing. They're going to be a tag team next week. There is a six-man tag next week. Lance Archer, Brian Cage, and Ricky Starks are a team. They have to work together next week. And Taz says the deal, remember our deal. The deal is that when Archer wins the championship from Moxley on the anniversary show, the first title shot, the first AEW title shot goes to Brian Cage. That is the arrangement that they have reached. Jake said, understood, that's the deal we made. Archer took the mic, said that after he wins the title, he and Cage are going to go Godzilla all over Daly's place. Big man match. I thought maybe they would do this for the FTW title. Make that like a tough man title. Just big guys just beating the hell out of each other. And this would have been a good feud. So now they're teasing that we might get it for the AEW title, which we won't. We're not going to have two heels feuding over the AEW title, but it's nice to think about. So Jon Moxley emerges from the crowd. Out comes Moxley. He's jumped from behind by Ricky Starks and Brian Cage. All of a sudden, who arrives? The big savior here in this segment is big Will Hobbs. Will Hobbs shows up. He nails Cage with the chair. Heels scatter. AEW announced earlier today on their social media channels that Will Hobbs is all elite. So Will Hobbs has been officially signed to an AEW contract. He was in the Battle Royal, had a good showing there. He's made mostly appearances on AEW Dark, but he's a guy who they think could be a star. So they've officially signed. He's built like a tank. He's not tall, but he's a big guy. He's built like a tank. That's how I would describe it. In a way, kind of reminds me of Jeff Cobb. Kind of the way Jeff Cobb is built. And Cobb, by the way, if you didn't hear that news, is not coming to AEW. He turned down an offer from AEW, and Jeff Cobb is going to New Japan. He's going to New Japan Pro Wrestling. But Moxley says Hobbs is one of his partners. Will Hobbs will be one of Jon Moxley's partners next week. The other, he looks in the camera and he says, Darby. He goes, I know you're at home. I know you're watching. You better show up next week. So Jon Moxley has issued the invitation to Darby Allin to show up on Dynamite and be his partner next week so Darby can get his revenge on Ricky Starks. And so that's going to be the match. That's the big six-man tag coming up next week on next week's episode of Dynamite. So now we get to the main event. This was the highlight of the night. Best Friends against Santana and Ortiz in a parking lot fight. Pinfall, submission, or surrender only. So this was not a match where the referee could really stop it for any reason. They made that very clear. Referee was powerless to stop it. Pinfall, submission, or surrender. Those are the rules here for this match. And we had the scene in the parking lot, very similar to some parking lot brawls we've seen in WWE. I remember the one with John Cena and Eddie Guerrero from SmackDown many years ago, 2003 maybe it was. All the cars, right? They form like a circle. All the wrestlers. That's basically what this was. You had wrestlers making noise and cheering and chanting, and they were surrounded by a whole series of cars. Santana and Ortiz were rocking the dead president's face paint, and they just let these guys loose. And these guys had the very definition of a parking lot fight. So they placed Ortiz under the hood of one of the cars early on, and Trent was slamming the hood down repeatedly on Ortiz. Chuck climbs up onto the roof of the car, hits a cannonball onto the hood, and Trent follows with a sit-out senton. That did not look like it felt good. But I have no sympathy, because why would you do that? Why would you do a move like that? Why would you do a senton where you're putting your own back and your own body in harm's way to do what probably is minimal damage to the guy underneath? So Trent is an idiot. Got what he deserved. Best Friends placed a sheet of plywood as like a little platform across the back of the pickup truck that was parked there. They created this little platform. We'll come back to that. That'll play into the match later. Santana whips out the steel baton. Whips out the steel baton. And he nails Chuck with it. And he hit Trent across the spine with it. Ortiz grabbed a sledgehammer, chucked it right at Chuck. I didn't plan that. He threw the sledgehammer at Chuck. He ducked, and it went through the windshield of the car. We had Ortiz suplexing Chuck on the roof of a car, which kind of caved in. Nice big dent there. And Santana, from an adjacent car, comes diving off with a giant splash onto Chuck, onto the roof of the car. Trent speared Ortiz through a sheet of plywood that was propped up against one of the cars. This is a different sheet of plywood, just speared him right through it. It broke in half. Ortiz whacked Trent in the head with a metal dustpan. It looked like a shovel, but upon further inspection, it was like a metal silver dustpan. Chuck suplexed Ortiz onto a metal guardrail. These guys were beating the shit out of each other. I mean, these guys, they were bleeding from the eye, bleeding from the arm, bleeding from the back. Although nothing like Trent was here in just a moment. We had Ortiz powerbombing Trent on the roof of a car. That left another nice dent in the car. And Santana and Ortiz, this was just sickening. So they pick up Trent. You know, like the Shield used to do the triple powerbomb. So these guys pick up Trent in like a double powerbomb position, and they deliver a running powerbomb to Trent through the windshield of one of the cars. They just powerbombed him right onto the windshield. And I don't know if it was gimmicked glass. Probably not. But even if it was, that sucks. If you're Trent taking that move, that's fucking brutal. And I don't like it when guys are fucking around with glass. Glass and fire. Glass and fire are two things you don't want to fuck around with. Because they can do some damage. It doesn't matter how safe you do it. It doesn't matter how many precautions you think you're taking. Glass and fire will fuck you up. So I always cringe when I see guys doing spots like that. This was just brutal. And when Trent came up, you know, his back was covered in pieces, shards of glass. And his back was all cut up. His back started bleeding. Blood running down his back. Ugh. Imagine having to be the guy now who, I guess his mom, is going to have to pick pieces of glass out of his back for the next 2 weeks. So Santana went and retrieved the giant metal pipe. All of a sudden, out of the trunk of one of the cars, as Santana is coming over, out from the trunk pops Orange Cassidy, who was just casually hanging out in the trunk, had his sunglasses on too, in the dark trunk, pops out of the trunk, and he's got a fist wrapped in a steel chain. He's got a steel chain wrapped around his fist. He hits the orange punch, that Superman punch, to Santana, knocks him out. Orange Cassidy hoists Santana up on his shoulders and delivers him over to Chuck Taylor. Chuck Taylor gives him a pile driver on the hood of a car. At the same time, on another car, on that pickup truck I mentioned, Trent is setting up for Storm Zero to Ortiz. And down through that piece of plywood, remember I said there was like a bridge? They set that piece of plywood up in the back of that truck, right down through the plywood in the back of the truck, and he gets the pin. And I will reiterate what I said at the beginning of the other stream, before we got cut off, which is that one of my all-time favorite street fights in wrestling. It was brutal, but it was so much fun to watch, was the Spring Stampede 94 match between the Nasty Boys and the team of Cactus Jack and Max Payne. Or Man Mountain Rock, as he would later become, call him whatever you want. That thing was just an absolute car wreck. This is in that same category for me. This was awesome. I thought this was great. They did some stupid shit with the glass that I wasn't thrilled with, but if you're going to have a parking lot fight, then fuck, man. This is what a parking lot fight needs to look like. These guys had an issue that had been brewing for weeks and involved Trent's mother, right? They made it personal. Santana had made the comment when they defaced and damaged the van, I wish her mom was in it. Like, all this, like, personal shit. How do you blow that off? You blow it off in a street fight or a cage match. That's how you blow it off. You have a blood match. Blood is going to be spilled. And so instead of going the cage route, they went the route of the parking lot fight. And I thought this was fantastic. I thought this was exactly what it needed to be. Trent's mom, she was there for the big finale. Trent's mom was in the van, or in a van. I couldn't tell if it was the same van. It probably was. She's in the van. Orange Cassidy gets in the front. He's going to ride shotgun. And the best friends load themselves into the back. Sue's driving off. And I'm thinking to myself, I mean, Trent's back was covered in blood. If I were his mom, I'd be like, you ain't getting in my fucking car. You're going to walk behind the car. You ain't getting in my car like that. I remember when I hurt my knee in Colombia a couple of years ago. And I was, the way that Trent was bleeding from his back, I was bleeding from my knee, from my leg. And I had to be literally carried by somebody who was down there. And he put me in the back of his SUV. And I just remember the whole time I was apologizing. I was like, I'm so sorry. He's like, what are you apologizing? I said, because I'm getting blood all over your car. That's all I was thinking about. I was apologizing to him, even though he was driving me to the hospital to try to save my freaking life so I would stop bleeding. But off goes Sue. She starts to ride, and all of a sudden, she stops the car. Trent's mom stops the car, and she reaches out the window, and she puts up the middle finger. I thought that was as perfect an ending to this show as maybe I've ever seen. Maybe any episode of Dynamite. That might have been the most satisfying finish, the most satisfying conclusion to an episode of Dynamite that I've ever seen in the nearly 1 year that this show has been on the air. That was fucking great. Because I thought she was just going to drive off, and I'm like, oh man, you're not going to do anything? Like, you know, Santana was threatening them, and yeah, she's just going to drive off? There's not going to be any real payoff here? And then she stopped the car, and I saw the arm, and I'm like, here we go. And up went the middle finger. I go, ah, that's perfect. That's just the perfect ending. So I thought that was great. I loved it. So yes, I thought that was an excellent capper to what was a very good, not perfect, but a very good overall episode of Dynamite. I enjoyed the opener. I enjoyed the women's match. Even the Jericho tag match with Private Party was good. So there really wasn't anything dreadful on the show. Really wasn't. So I was very happy with the show on the whole. Now, next Tuesday, we get a late night, what they're calling Late Night Dynamite, which I believe is the one-hour show that they already taped. This was going to air tonight had there been an NBA game, and we would have had the full episode of Dynamite tomorrow. Instead, they're going to air it after the NBA playoffs next Tuesday. We know that Chris Jericho will be doing commentary on that show, and the main event is going to be Matt Sydal, hopefully not having a Botchamania moment, as he unfortunately had it all out. Although I did think it was very clever what they did on Being the Elite with Michael Nakazawa oiling up the turnbuckle to show that he was the one who caused Sydal to slip. I thought that was funny. But it's going to be Matt Sydal against Sean Spears, a main event that I'm sure you cannot wait for, right? You're just waiting with bated breath to see the main event of that late night Dynamite next Tuesday. Next Wednesday is a normal two-hour live edition of Dynamite. We got the six-man tag, Moxley, Darby Allin, assuming he accepts the challenge, and Will Hobbs against Lance Archer, Brian Cage, and Ricky Starks. We've got Orange Cassidy getting a TNT championship match. He's getting a TNT title match with Brody Lee. And Hikaru Shida teams with Thunder Rosa against Diamante and Ivelisse. Looks like another good episode coming up next week. That should be enjoyable. Let's take a look at the Twitter polls. AEW, 82% thumbs up, 17% thumbs down. So an overwhelmingly positive score so far for AEW. Over on the NXT side, a little bit less. Still thumbs up, though. 61% thumbs up, 39% thumbs down. Not even 600 votes. How many do we have for AEW? Yeah, that's a big difference. I mean, there's more than double the number of votes in the AEW poll. But it just goes to show you the overall interest level in both shows when they're head-to-head like this on the same night. You know, generally speaking, there is less of an interest in the NXT side. That's kind of just how it is. If you want to call in, we'll do a few minutes of phone calls here. I know who this is. We got Reconson on the line. What's going on? What's your question this week?
First off, congrats that A-Rod is not the owner, and you guys actually have a decent owner.
Yeah, phew,
gosh, and then second, yes, I'm actually going to be there live next Wednesday in Jacksonville. So I will give you a live report.
That's awesome.
I have like a little rant. I'm just sick of fucking AEW just like being so inconsistent with their storylines. Like, they tell more than they show. They should have either clips from BTE or backstage segments or something to like fuse storylines together. Cause like some of it just, it just makes no sense, and I'm just sick of like them just throwing shit at the wall and seeing what works and what doesn't, and it's aggravating.
But that's how they book. I mean, you remember what Cody said when AEW first started. They don't have writers. They don't have any writers. There's no script for the show. Tony Khan comes up with a lot of the creative stuff. I'm sure the VPs offer their thoughts as well. And they just put the shows together like that. And so in a way, like, I don't mind it because I have grown so tired of how scripted and stilted and, you know, that formula that we see from like Raw and SmackDown on most weeks. It's nice to have things organized like that, but they take it too far as how rigid everything is. So I have found the AEW way of doing it a little refreshing in that you can tell there's no script. They just put shit together and, you know, the guys go out there and they do their thing. But, you know, maybe there could be some kind of, I don't know, like middle ground, like happy medium between the two. But it hasn't bothered me. I mean, it sounds like it's bothered you, but, I mean, that hasn't really bothered me too much.
Yeah, it's just like, for example, Abaddon, where the fuck is she? She should be on the main TV.
Okay, so that,
she should have more matches.
Yeah, if you're talking about that, I'll agree with you on that. There are people who will show up on Dynamite once, and then you don't see them again, or they're on Dark, and not everybody watches Dark. I've had people email me and tell me that Dark is their favorite show, because Dark is just straight wrestling. They put a whole bunch of matches on there. Apparently the commentary with Taz and Excalibur, they have a good chemistry together, so I might have to start checking that out more often. But yeah, Abaddon, that's a great example. Where the fuck has Abaddon been? I mean, she came out on Dynamite once and she had this incredible look that I would imagine the more you see her it becomes a little less special, but they didn't do anything with her, and everybody on social media, all they could talk about that night was Abaddon. So you're right about that. There are people who will show up and then they just get relegated to Dark. And that is something where there needs to be a consistency in terms of the appearances that they're making on the show. I will give you that. That's a good point.
And then, like, for example, tonight, the NWA title, like, I know they shouldn't promote other companies, but I feel like this should have been, like, maybe a promo package for it. Because, to me, that's a big deal. Another company's title on your TV show, that's, you know, you should make that as a big deal.
Well, I mean, they had a great video package in the build-up for the match that she had with Shida I thought that video package was actually really good, really well done. They had clips from NWA Power, and they kind of got into that a little bit. So I like what they've done so far. I mean, I think, again, you don't want to just, it's weird. Like, you don't want to put them over too much, but I think they put them over just enough to establish where she's from, you know, the importance of the title. And I like what they've done. I mean, I like the fact that we're getting Thunder Rosa on TV. I have no idea when the NWA is going to start running power shows again. And so she's the NWA Women's Champion. Well, what does that mean if she's not appearing anywhere and defending the title? You could say the same thing about Nick Aldis. You know, now they're building up something with him and Mike Bennett. But if we get Thunder Rosa on TV most weeks, it's fine with me. I got no complaints about that.
And then I guess just like another, I guess like last question. Do you think I don't know, it's going to sound weird, but do you think wrestling should go back to how it was like even like 10 years ago or 20 years ago? Where like what you were saying earlier about the dives, like everyone should just kind of be unique? Because I'm right now, nowadays, 2020 wrestling, I'm sick of like big guys, everyone just doing flips, everyone's just acting indie. Like everyone, you know, you should have powerhouses and technical people, but I don't feel like we don't really get that nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things I wish would kind of go away or periods that I think if we went back to that, it would be better, but it's not going to. I mean, once the genie is out of the bottle, that's it. You're not just going to go, okay, everybody, yeah, all these moves you've been doing now for the last 10 years, you can't do it anymore. We're gonna go back to the way things were in 2003. It doesn't work like that. I think you could definitely, if you're Vince McMahon or Tony Khan, you could put some kind of edict out there that says, okay, these dives through the ropes, these dives out over the top rope, it's only going to be reserved for certain people. Or maybe we'll go through these periods, these phases where, okay, there's a moratorium on this, except for these people who have it kind of built into their moveset, like smaller guys. And then on like a big pay-per-view, if Keith Lee wanted to bust out a cannonball out over the top rope and everybody would catch him, you know, once every, I don't know, you know, 6 months or something on pay-per-view, that's fine, right? Because you can go back even to the Attitude Era and you had that. I remember Diesel did a friggin' planche out over the top rope once during a lumberjack match. But was he doing that every month? Was he doing that every match? No. So, yeah, I would like to just kind of go back to a time when people weren't doing that all the time. But, you know, the genie's out of the bottle. You can't put it back in. Let's go to 702.
Hey, Solomonster, how you doing?
Good, how are you? Is this Chase?
Yes, this is.
What's going on? Happy times. We got Chase on the line here.
Oh, thank you. I just had a quick question about the Lance Archer-John Moxley match coming up on the 14th.
Sure.
What in the world would you, if you were booking AEW, what would you do to keep Lance Archer strong? Would you either have him win the title or how would you have him lose?
Well, if he's going to lose, and I think he probably is going to lose, I think the best thing to do would be to have an opponent already set up for him and he tries to help him or when I say help him, I'm thinking of what they talked about tonight, right? We now know that Brian Cage, if Archer wins, is going to get the first title shot because he's been promised that. So it almost makes me wonder if that's setting things up where in this match, Taz's guys try to get involved. It backfires. He now has a built-in excuse about why he lost. And so even though he lost, he can blame it on them. And then we get the big man brawl anyway between Archer and Brian Cage. That's probably the best way out of this that I see. Instead of just beating him straight up, would I put the title on him? I would have, I just don't think it's the right time. I think when you're ready to take the belt off Moxley, it should be Omega or somebody if Omega kind of goes down that dark path. You could do it, but I wouldn't see Archer as like a long-term champion or anything. So to me, what's the point? Put the belt on him for 2 months and then take it off him? I think Brian Cage is going to factor into that finish. That's what I think.
Okay. And then last question and I'll let you go.
Mm-hmm.
If who would you have as the next opponent for Moxley? Would it be Omega? And if it is, if you do say Omega, how would you build him up to challenge Moxley?
I don't know if the timing is probably not great to do it at the next pay-per-view, because I thought things were kind of setting up nicely where, you know, going into the last pay-per-view, if the turn had happened and if Kenny just went straight heel, you could have built to that. You could have built to that match at Full Gear in November. And I guess they still could. There's still time they could do it. But it looks like whatever split ends up happening with him and Omega, we might get that match first before he goes on to contend for the title. So if it's not at Full Gear, maybe it's at Revolution in February. Maybe that's the time to do it. But I think you want to get back to that match. There's unresolved issues between those two. You know, Kenny lost the first one, the unsanctioned thing a year ago. You can bring it back. This time Omega's the heel. How do you do it? Look, Omega has made it very clear he doesn't want to do the tag team thing anymore. So maybe when they get their rematch with FTR, you know, look, maybe he pulls a Sid. Remember what Sid did to Hogan many years ago, reaching for the tag? He jumps off the apron. He's not there for the tag. He's got to go heel. None of this bullshit where it's like they're kind of teasing it, but, oh, you know, I just want to go do my thing. I don't think people want to hear that. I think they want a little bit of that old Kenny Omega back. So I would push him towards the heel side, and that's the best way to probably do it, is just have him just go all in on a heel turn on Hangman. People like Hangman. Hangman is trying to make up with the guy. You know, he doesn't want to lose his partner. He doesn't want to lose his friend. And Kenny can just go off on him, you know, and that probably is the best way to do it.
All right. Well, thank you very much for taking my call, Solid Monster.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you for the support, and happy belated birthday.
Thank you very much. Have a great night.
All right, you too. So that was Chase. Let me just play catch up with some of these super chats here. We had one person who I know disagreed with Reconson from his call before. EJ, in honor of the U.S. Open starting tomorrow, I was wondering if you have ever gone golfing before. If you have, how did it go? Well, I've been mini golfing. I've gone mini golfing before. Usually I do very well with the mini golfing. I've gone to the driving range. The one time I tried to really golf, there was some old guy in front of us who was taking forever on the holes. It was him and his stupid friend, and they were wearing the golf shit that those old people wear. You know, you know what I'm talking about, the golf shirt and the golf shorts or pants. I think it was shorts. And they're like just having a conversation, and we're standing there, and I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, let's move it along here. But you got to like wait behind them. And I just got so sick and tired of it. I'm like, I'm never doing this again. So that was it. I swore off golfing. I don't remember being all that good at it. But that one old guy really pissed me off. I went to throw my club at his head. I said, no more. Golfing is not for me. I'm not going to wait around for other people to finish up with the hole in front of me. Andy Jonathan, very happy with the show tonight. If you could have one current title belt from any of the promotions, if I can have one, which one would you choose? IWGP. I love the IWGP belt. I think the AEW world title is a beautiful belt. I'm also a fan of the 10 pounds of gold. Classic NWA title that Nick Aldis carries around. Those are beautiful belts. But if I had to pick just one, it would be the IWGP. Love that belt. Love that belt. I don't know if they sell replicas of that. I ought to look into that. Would love to have an IWGP title. I don't even know if they sell those. Oz and Glorious, he 1,000%, 10,000% disagrees with Reconson, but he didn't say what he disagreed on. Reconson had like 68 questions there. I don't know which one of them he disagrees with. Nayef, thank you again for the 10. And where the fuck am I? Just donated. Or where the fuck I am. Solid Monster, been a fan for a long time. Appreciate everything that you do. Also, by the way, Dominic Mysterio does not train at the PC. I train with him here in San Diego at Level Up Pro Wrestling. We are in great hands here. Well, that's awesome. Yeah, Dominic, I don't know. I've seen Dominic getting I don't know, like a lot of hate, but getting hate from some people, and it could just be the people who are like, oh, you know, he's only on TV because of his dad, which he is. I don't even think he would deny that. He's part of a storyline involving his father. But everything I've seen from him so far has been very impressive. You know, he's a young guy. He was thrown right into the fire. I mean, he was thrown right on Monday Night Raw. A SummerSlam match with Seth Rollins. He had a cage match on TV. It's like he's going through all these phases of his career in the span of like 3 months. And I think they need to just kind of slow it down a little bit. Because once this all plays itself out, that's when he kind of comes back down to reality. And it's like, well, now what do you do with him? You got to take your time. That's why I said it wouldn't be such a bad thing for him to end up in NXT. I don't think it would be such a terrible thing. This push, you cannot sustain this push. This is not going to last. You know, he's going to be doing this for a long time. Maybe he goes to NXT and he tries to follow in his father's footsteps and he can challenge for the Cruiserweight title. Now he's small enough to. And just take your time and let him, you know, kind of establish an identity of his own. I've been very impressed by what I've seen of him so far. So if that's a product of Level Up Pro Wrestling, then yeah. You got some talented people there. Giovanni Zarate, thank you for the review. I've been a fan since episode 118. Your Bob Holly interview is my favorite. A real hidden gem. Yeah, you know, I got to do a better job of promoting that. And Bob wanted to come back on. I never did have him back on the show. That's one of my favorite interviews that I ever did. He was very open. I mean, we talked about a lot of stuff. That was like a 90-minute interview I did. This is going back probably 5 or 6 years now. It's right here on the YouTube channel. So if you never heard it, the interview was up there. I don't remember the episode number, but it was also pushed out as audio on the feed. Reconson, how come we only get singles and tag team matches on Dynamite? Where are the multi-man matches? Probably Dark. Now, they have a lot of singles matches on Dark. Well, we're going to get a six-man tag next week, so you're in luck. You're going to be there live for it. What are you complaining about? And Dry Chicken Without Flavor says, Dynamite tonight was great.
Hey, Solid Monster. This is Bob from Chicago.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, how's it going? A longtime fan. You know, been listening probably for about 10 years now.
Wow.
Keep up the good work and everything. My question is regarding Tony Khan's obsession with Orange Cassidy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after the Jericho feud for 14 weeks, I realized that, you know, he's a mark for Cassidy, but, you know, it seems like it's going too far now. You know, he's going to get a title match. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, he's getting a title match. It's not a world title match. I don't see him, you know, at that level. I don't think he should be there right now. TNT title match is fine. I don't think he's going to win. So when this match is over, he'll probably be right back, you know, right back in the middle of the card. I don't know who they feud him with next. I don't know, you know, where he goes from here. I don't really have an issue with him getting a TNT title match because he did beat Jericho. You know, he did win that feud. Jericho's a former world champion, but I think Brody Lee is probably going to demolish him. So that's how I think this is going to end.
Yeah, for sure. I hope so, at least.
Yeah.
My other question, this new stable with Kingston and Lucha Bros and the Butcher and the Blade, where do you think this all leads?
I think that what they tease tonight is that they're going to try to bring the bunny back. I don't know if they're going to call her the bunny, but I guess Allie might be the resident female in the group if he's going to try to get her back. So I think that's probably the next step. Beyond that, I mean, Kingston should try to be getting one of his team's tag team title opportunity. But the problem is, you know, yeah. FTR just won the belts and they're not dropping those things until they've had a chance to feud with the Bucks. And that program could drag on for a while. You know those teams are not going to have just one match. So I don't know I don't know where that leaves the Lucha Bros right now. I don't know where that leaves Jericho and Hager. They have a lot of tag teams in this company. So
I mean, I wouldn't advocate a second set of tag team belts, but maybe they can come up with some kind of... See, I don't know. The problem is they just had a tournament for the women for a trophy. So you don't really want to do the same thing with the men after you just did that. But they have a lot of teams. So just give us good tag team wrestling, I guess. But I don't think they're going to be in the mix for the belts anytime soon.
Yeah, I agree. All right, that's it, Solid Monster. I appreciate it. Awesome. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. Thanks for the call. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, they almost have too many teams. You know, we talk about how the women's division was weak for so long. They've made improvements. They've brought new faces in. They almost have too many teams. It's like it's weird. WWE doesn't have enough teams, and AEW has too many teams. Like, in some alternate universe, these two promotions would, like, coexist, and they would work together, and they would trade talent back and forth when they need. And WWE would be like, yeah, we need teams. Send Pentagon and Phoenix over our way. And I think they could improve the show a lot. And then in exchange, AEW can get somebody from WWE. But obviously that's not how the world works. That's not how the world we live in works, unfortunately. King Soul with the $5. I predict Kenny Omega will turn heel by beating up Jon Moxley on the anniversary episode. Like how Jon Moxley did to him on the first episode. I had forgotten about that. That's a good point. Maybe that's where they do it. Maybe that's where they can do it. You may be right. Oz and Glorious, shout out to my boy Reekin Sun unleashing his inner Cornette tonight. Love you, though. Let's see here. Where the fuck I am? Yeah, I just brought it up since he resigned now, but... you would talk about Mysterio jeopardizing his standing with WWE while Dominic being at the PC. The head trainer here is B-Boy. Love you, dude. Well, shout out to them. Ray, I guess Ray is re-signed and he's healing up from his triceps injury, so he'll be back soon. I don't think he needed surgery for that, so. But, you know, again, when that stuff runs its course, there's got to be some kind of plan for what to do with Dominic. My fear is, I remember when Chris Masters was brought up, and there was no family connection. It was just that, you know, he was a guy who had a big physique, and Vince fell in love with him, and he was like 20 years old or something at the time, and they're like, let's bring him to TV. And Chris Masters is on TV feuding with Shawn Michaels and like these big names, and then they didn't know what to do with the guy. It's like they discarded him. And eventually he came back to the company, and he actually... had improved as a wrestler. But sometimes you only get that one chance to make a first impression, which is why I was a little hesitant when I kind of saw that they were going to bring Dominic up. I didn't know what to expect. And then he kind of blew me away with some of his matches. But when this is over, you got to have some kind of plan, you know, for what you're going to do with him. They got to start building stars, man. They've got some problems over there. And Dominic can be one of them. A star, not a problem. I'm not saying Dominic's a problem. Reekin Sun, I mean like three ways and four ways, not another tag team match. Oh, like triple threats and fatal. Why do you want more triple threats and fatal four ways, though? We get enough of them in WWE. We went through this whole phase where it was like nothing but multi-man matches. I like the singles matches. Let's stick to that for a while. And EJ, speaking of Bob Holly, is it possible he does a one-off appearance with Cody? They do have a history together. I think it would be cool just to see once. I don't think so. I mean, the closest thing would have been if Cody still had the TNT title. I guess they could have maybe brought Bob in for a TNT title match, play off their history a little bit. But it wasn't like they were a big team or anything. I don't think people would care about seeing the two of them back together. I mean, it wasn't like they were a big team. Who would even remember that? Who would remember it and who would care enough to see the two of them brought back together? Brandon V with the $5. If Omega and Page face at Full Gear and Moxley beats Archer, who faces Moxley at Full Gear? Kingston? If so, you need some serious depth on the card to excite. Eddie Kingston. Wow, Eddie Kingston getting an AEW championship match? Well, it would have to be, boy, you know, it would have to be something like a no DQ type match. I mean, that's the environment I think that Kingston thrives in. I saw some matches Eddie Kingston had on NWA Power, and they were not good. They were just, And I don't know if it's just a lot of years on his body and kind of wrestling a harder style. The possibility of that kind of scares me. I don't think I see that as being the championship match, but yeah, I mean, they'd have to come up with something unless it's a rematch with Archer. Or maybe they do a triple threat. Maybe it's Archer and Cage. Could be. Could be. Remember, he promised Cage that first shot, so they could always do something like that. 657.
How are you doing? I've been watching or listening since 2013, but this is the first time I'm calling, so I kind of didn't know what to do.
Yes, but, well, you got through. That's anyways, all that matters.
Thankfully. But I have two questions. If you're AEW, do you take the baggage that potentially comes with signing a Tessa Blanchard, knowing it could elevate your division?
Me personally, I don't think I would. That's a decision they would have to make. I mean, they have to weigh the pros and cons, just like WWE. And I think it speaks volumes, because I had people, when I was talking about the whole Tessa thing a few months ago, and she became available, which I guess would have been back in end of June, July, right? That's when her contract ran out. And they were like, oh, you're insane. Yeah. WWE's going to snatch her right up, or, you know, if AEW doesn't. And here we are now in September. It's mid-September. And the only thing I've seen of Tessa Blanchard is I think she's taking an independent appearance somewhere. So, again, it's not that cut and dry. These companies have to just weigh the pros and cons of, you know, the stories and the baggage involved in bringing her in. No one's denying that she has talent. She's a great talent, and she would be a huge boost to either one of these women's divisions. If it were me, I just don't think it's something that I would, you know, I wouldn't be going in that direction. It's just not a headache that I would want. But at some point, someone's going to snatch her up, because she can be a star. She's a talent. She's still young. She's gonna end up somewhere. But these companies are going to have to weigh, you know, the kind of the PR of it. Not just the PR of it, but again, if she's made enemies with certain people, you don't want there to be unrest in the locker room. So that's just, yeah, it's something they've got to make that decision. But I think it's very telling that here we are in September, and has she been on Dynamite? Nope. Has she been on WWE television? Nope. There were rumors that they were going to do Evolution 2 at the end of August, right? It ended up being Payback. But, oh, it's going to be Evolution, and they're saving Tessa. She's going to be a big surprise. And August 30th came and went, right? Payback came and went. No Tessa Blanchard. So I think that speaks volumes.
Yeah, I agree. I guess my last question is, we talk a lot about WWE not making stars or being reluctant to do so. Do you think AEW is in that same situation right now? Not saying that they don't want to make stars, but, you know, the top guys are all WWE guys. Like, it just makes it, like, I really just hope that they really go in on all in on Kenny Omega and, like, push him as the guy, because, you know, he's not my favorite, but he is like a non-WWE guy, and I think he could definitely help them and, you know, bring in newer people maybe. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, I'll let you go with that. I think, I don't know about bringing in new people, but I would love to see some of that New Japan Kenny Omega in WWE. But what do I mean when I say that? Well, He was over there having these epic matches, and the talent that he has to work with in AEW is different. This is a different roster. But when Kenny Omega would have a match in New Japan, when he was the champion, when he was fighting for the title, it felt like a big deal. It felt like this just, I don't know, it just felt like, okay, we're in for an epic match. Probably a long match, but we're in for something special. And he had a lot of fantastic matches there. And contrary to what some people would say, yes, a lot of those matches with Okada, they did tell a story. Just because you didn't see what the story was, you didn't pick up on it, doesn't mean that there wasn't a story. So I'd love to see him bring some of that, like some of that Kenny Omega, over to AEW. It's not a case of AEW not pushing Kenny. Kenny's a VP in the company. You know, it's a little worried about his push. If he's not being pushed in the top spot, it's because he doesn't want to be in the top spot. In fact, months ago, he commented about this, and he said, it's not about me. Everyone's telling me, oh, I miss the old Kenny Omega. And he was like, it's not about me. We're trying to make new stars. And my whole thing was, you're still a young company in its infancy. You have a guy here who can legitimately be the top star in the company. And you need star power. You need as much star power as you can get. And unlike a Jon Moxley or a Brody Lee or a Cody, as he just said on the phone, Kenny is a guy who never was on the WWE main roster. He was in the developmental system many years ago, but he's a guy that people can't point at and say, oh, it's another ex-WWE guy they're pushing. No, it's not. It's a guy WWE badly wanted. They made an offer for him, and they didn't get him. And he's not kind of being pushed at the level that I feel like he should be. Now I think we're about to get there. They took the long road. They took the scenic route. But I think that that's the direction that we're headed in. All right, we're going to give 203 another shot. Hopefully it works this time. 203?
Yo, what's up, Soul Monster? Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Hey, what's going on? It's that 90s lad, FKA Heavy Awesome Heel. I'm calling from Connecticut. What's going on?
Nothing much. I didn't hear anything before, so I let you go. But now I'm glad we got you back. So what's your question?
Thank you for having me. So I just want to know, where do you think this whole Dark Order storyline with Brody Lee ends up? I mean, I feel like they're just kind of wasting that face spot on Colt Cabana. I figured they would maybe use someone that's younger or like an up-and-comer to be in that position that he's in. So, you know, when he eventually breaks off, you know, it's like this whole like baby face turn, you know, getting away from the heel faction sort of scenario. But with Colt Cabana, I mean, I just don't get that vibe off him. And quite frankly, I just don't really care all that much when it comes to that.
Yeah, I don't care either.
So I just want to get your thoughts on that.
I think we're in the same boat. I mean, you know, look, Colt's, he's a talented guy, but this whole storyline, it's not anything that gets me, it doesn't get me excited. It wouldn't get me to pay for, you know, a show or anything if that were kind of the lead story. It's a side story in the middle of the card. I don't really care. It doesn't do anything for me. I think in the end, when the Dark Order stuff has run its course, I think the hope would be and should be that when this is over, out of it, they've made maybe a star or two. And not out of Brody, but they've got some young guys in there like John Silver and Alex Reynolds. And, you know, some of them are fan favorites. Maybe one of them will actually come out of this. Stu Grayson, you know, the Dark Order may not be my favorite act on the show, but that guy's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that guy, he's really good. So maybe some of those guys come out of this as bigger stars than they were. They get tired of being bullied by Brody Lee, and eventually they stand up to him. Maybe that's how it ends, and that's how the group sort of disintegrates, because it's not going to last forever. But it shouldn't be about getting Brody Lee over. Brody Lee's, he came over from a company where he was on television for so many years. People kind of know who he is. Now he's the TNT champion. So he'll be fine. But what new stars are you making that are going to come out of the Dark Order? Or do you just disband the whole thing and the whole thing was a goddamn waste of time? Right? That's kind of what it all boils down to in the end. I'd like to think that when you have a faction like with The Rock and The Nation, or, I mean, pick any other faction you want, when it's over, there's somebody coming out of it, somebody new who is a bigger star than they were at the very beginning.
Right, yeah. I mean, I guess what I was like really looking for with this group was, you know, like someone coming out of it, kind of like, I guess, for lack of a better example, you know, Daniel Bryan leaving the Wyatt family and just, you know, remembering that huge reaction he got. Obviously now with COVID, it's a lot different, but, you know, I just don't see anyone. I'm just not really sold on anyone that they have, a part of that group. I can only maybe think Anna Jay, she breaks apart from that group and becomes like a top, you know, baby face. No, I mean, I don't really know much about her. I don't know if she's really all that good.
She's,
I, don't watch it dark or anything.
She's very inexperienced. You could see when she, and we saw it in the, because I watched the women's tournament they did, which only aired on YouTube.
Yeah.
She's not that great in the ring. She's very inexperienced, but she's very young. So she's still relatively new at this, I think. And I think over time, she's definitely got something there. So she could be a star coming out of the group, absolutely. But there's got to be more than just Anna Jay, right? Maybe it's one person, two people, three people. But when this thing is over, they should have somebody new who comes out of it as maybe a babyface who's a bigger star than they were at the beginning. And then you can say, okay, you know what? The Dark Order thing, maybe I wasn't the biggest fan of it, but at least this guy broke out of the pack. And maybe now he'll be a big mid-card name in AEW. So I would hope they at least get that out of it.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I like Colt Cabana, you know. He's been around for a long time. And I like Brody Lee, too, a lot. But it's just, when it comes to that, like, that little story that's going on, I mean, you can see, like, you know, there was some tension between the two. Mm-hmm. I believe it was last week. And I'm just like, oh, God, I know where this is leading to, and I just don't care.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I'm in the same boat. Anything else?
All right. No, that's all. I just want to also thank you for everything you do, man. You've helped me, get through this COVID. I work from home, so listening to your podcasts and everything and your reviews are just huge help working from home and everything. So thanks for everything, man. Take care.
You too. I appreciate it. I think we're all, not all of us, but I mean, a lot of us are working from home. So you gotta take the distractions, I guess, where they come. So if this show is even a small help to some people out there, then that's awesome. I love hearing that. And I love these super chat messages too. That Indian dude just donated. Not that Indian dude, not that one. That one, right there. That Indian dude. Hey, Solo Monster, have you ever heard of the OSW guys, who recap and riff on old WWF pay-per-view events and history? Yes, we've interacted on Twitter in the past. I'm well aware of OSW. I've been around long enough, I'm pretty much aware of everybody. So, yes, I'm aware of what they do, and they do good shit. They do good work. And Deadpool. What's going on, James? Thank you for the $10, man. You are one of the longtime diehards, and I love you for it. So, again, guys, thank you for everything tonight. For bearing with me. It means a lot to me. I'll have to figure out. I'm probably going to have two videos now up on the channel. There's really nothing I can do about that. So if you put the two of them together, you get one complete Dynamite review. I'll be back with you next Wednesday. Hopefully we'll have problem-free stream next week. And of course, episode 670 of The Sound Off this Sunday. I'll see you for the RSPW Rewind on Friday. Until then, be well, stay safe. Have yourselves a fantastic night. And I'll see you back here for more Sound Off. Dynamite review next Wednesday. Take care, guys.